Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Thomas Scott India Limited conference call. Please stay connected. The call will begin shortly. Participants, you have been connected to Thomas Scott India Limited conference call. Please stay connected. The call will begin shortly. Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Thomas Scott India Limited Q3 and 9 months FY2026 earnings conference call hosted by Valorem Advisors. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then 0 on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now have the conference with Ms. Purvangi Jain from Valorem Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, Ms. Jain.
Good afternoon, everyone, and a warm welcome to you all. My name is Purvangi Jain from Valorem Advisors. We represent the investor relations of Thomas Scott India Limited. On behalf of the company, I would like to thank you all for participating in the company's earnings conference call for the third quarter and 9 months ended of the financial year 2026. Before we begin, let me mention a short cautionary statement. Some of the statements made in today's earnings conference call may be forward-looking in nature. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risk and uncertainties, which could cause actual results to differ from those anticipated. Such statements are based on management's belief as well as assumptions made by and information currently available to the management. Audiences are cautioned not to place any undue reliance on these forward-looking statements in making any investment decisions. The purpose of today's earnings call is purely to educate and bring awareness about the company's fundamental business and financial quarter under review. Let me now introduce you to the management participating with us in today's earnings call and hand it over to them for their opening remarks. We have with us Mr. Vedant Bang, Managing Director, heading the e-commerce division of the company. Without any delay, I request Mr. Vedant to start with his opening remarks. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Purvangi, and good afternoon to everyone and a very warm welcome to all of you for joining our earnings conference. As some of you may be new to our company, I would like to begin with a brief overview about the company and then move to our onto our operational and financial performance for the third quarter and the 9 months ended of the financial year 2026. Thomas Scott India Limited was incorporated in 2010 as a traditional apparel manufacturer and has since evolved over the years into a technology-enabled fashion retailer. The company has been formed through a demerger of Bung Overseas Limited with a vision of creating a focused retail and fashion business. Initially, we operated as a contract manufacturer for apparel from our Solapur facility for reputed domestic clients. This phase laid the foundation for strong product quality, disciplined manufacturing, and deep relationships across the apparel ecosystem. Over the years, we have identified an opportunity to move closer to the consumer and build our own retail identity. Building on the legacy of our manufacturing excellence, Thomas Scott has transformed into a digital-first, data-driven fashion company, integrating technology, analytics, and manufacturing to deliver trend-led products with speed and precision. Our plug-and-play ecosystem combines real-time data forecasting, real-time demand for inventory optimization, and rapid product launch capability. This build-for-demand model allows us to bring new styles to market in a very short time, thereby managing inventory risk and ensuring high responsiveness to consumer preferences. Today, we operate 12-plus brands and 2,000-plus SKUs, including our own flagship brand, Thomas Scott. We also support major global international brands through partnerships with marketplaces. Our products are distributed through leading online platforms like Myntra and others, as well as to our own offline stores in Bangalore for our brand Thomas Scott. With manufacturing units in Solapur, Bangalore and Gurgaon and fulfillment centers across India, we ensure a high degree of control over quality, efficiency and delivery speed. Positioned in the online premium fashion segment, Thomas Scott, our own brand, caters to aspirational, brand-conscious consumers who value style and quality at accessible prices. We continue to strengthen our technology and analytics platforms. Our own platforms, Ready and Catalog AI, are now being actively deployed across product planning, demand forecasting, and catalog management. These tools allow us to identify emerging fashion trends quickly, gain pricing insights, and determine high-demand products, leading to better conversion rates and faster response to changing market preferences. Building on a strong foundation, we continue to focus on scaling our operations efficiently, deepening our brand presence, and leveraging technology to drive sustainable, profitable growth. With that background, let me now take you through the company's performance for the third quarter and 9 months ended of financial year 2026. For the quarter under review, we delivered our highest ever quarterly sales performance this quarter. Revenue from operations stood at INR 66 crore, an increase of 46% year-on-year. EBITDA for the period stood at rupees 8 crore, reflecting a 41% increase year-on-year. The EBITDA margins stood at 11.92%. Profit after tax stood at 5 crore, an increase of 67% year-on-year, and PAT margins stood at 7.54%. For the 9 months ended of the financial year, revenue from operations stood at 177 crore, an increase of 56% year-on-year. EBITDA for the period stood at 22 crore, up 75% year-on-year, with EBITDA margins at 12.65%. Net profit for 9 months stood at about 13 crore rupees, registering an 82% year-on-year increase with PAT margins of 7.4%. This strong financial performance reflects disciplined execution and operating leverage gained from our scale and digital model. This performance was despite the fact that during the quarter, we encountered an unforeseen incident at one of our warehouses in Bhiwandi, in Maharashtra. On 25th November 2025, an accidental fire resulted in the loss of inventory and certain fixed assets stored at that location. I am relieved to share that there were no loss to or injury to life. The affected inventory was adequately insured under a valid insurance policy. The estimated losses are fully covered and the insurance claim process is currently underway. Thanks to the swift response of our teams, we were able to restore the supply chain operations very quickly and minimize disruption as much as possible to our customers and channel partners. This incident has further reinforced our focus on strengthening risk management framework and enhancing operational resilience across the organization. In other updates, our own brand Thomas Scott recorded revenues of 27 crore, marking a 91% year-on-year growth, reflecting the rising strength of our own direct-to-consumer franchise and sharper assortment planning. The licensed and other brand segment sustained steady momentum reporting revenue figures of 34 crores, up 18% year-on-year, driven by healthy traction across key partner platforms. Meanwhile, contract manufacturing business contributed rupees 5 crores, registering a robust growth of 113% year-on-year, supported by improved capacity utilization and enduring client relationships. Demand conditions during the quarter remained encouraging. Our expansion into new categories, including winter wear, contributed incremental revenue streams and supported overall growth. We remain confident in our long-term strategy and are committed to delivering sustainable growth backed by prudent financial management and disciplined execution. With this now, I open the floor for questions and answers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask the question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask the question. The first question is from the line of Rehan Sayed from Trinetra Asset Managers. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, team, and thanks for taking my question. So, sir, my first question is around your inventory levels that have risen significantly to INR 77 crore. So, as you, I understand, you scale your SKU count, which has reached over 31,216 further brands in FY26. So how are you ensuring that the high wheel approach doesn't lead to a long tail of slow moving inventory in your fulfillment center? This is my first question.
Sure. I'll take one question at a time. So on the inventory management part, I just want to be clear that the SKUs that we report are the number of SKUs that we've launched to date. Not all of these SKUs are in stock, which means that there could be a number of SKUs which would have sold through over a period. And if you see the incremental SKUs within this quarter, it has been at the constant pace that we have been recording quarter on quarter. In fact, much of the growth is coming from going deeper in SKUs that have performed much better in the previous periods. So the pace of launch remains constant. There is very slight acceleration in launch of SKUs, which is commensurate with us entering into H2, where the festive season is. However, that remains stable generally, and the in-stock SKUs are not is actually the correct metric to look at, and we will see how we can update how we release that information so that it gives more knowledge. In any case, I just want to reiterate on one of our long-standing high-width, low-depth strategies. So it is important to understand that when we launch a style, we do not launch a lot of inventory in that style. It is just 100, 120 units that we launch across, you know, 4, 5, 6 sizes to just test out. Once this test is completed, and then only do we decide based on certain performance markers whether we have to scale or not. Due to this test and scale model, Generally, the inventory contribution in some of these styles is very less, is very less to launch a style. But yes, once we have identified how well it is performing, our ability to scale is what drives future growth and profitability. So this is the core of our model and how we are doing things. And that remains to be there. Other than this, obviously, even the styles that we are launching, so one is doing high width, low depth. The other is launching smart inventory based on actual trend insights that we do. We identify what is actually working, which micro markets, which is keywords, are actually working on marketplaces, and we launch based on that. So we are launching very specifically where there is organic demand. Having said that, even then, there is end of cycle, end of life kind of inventory that does come up, for which we use our end-of-season sale periods, which is typically in June and December, to clear out the inventory. And those sales typically are at a discount. So largely, a combination of these factors allow us to clear most of the inventory, within a 180 to 40-day kind of period. And that's for the tail inventory, the period that I was speaking about, not for the general on an average. even then, if there is certain amount of inventory that cannot be liquidated, then we have a liquidation team based out of Bangalore that looks into how brand markers can be removed, and then this can be removed at a certain discount in alternative market. But again, that's a very small percentage of the overall inventory. So all in all, the various steps that I mentioned allow us to kind of manage inventory more effectively. This is to answer your first question. I will pause here in case you'd like to ask the second question.
I have been answered very clearly. And my second question is around your receivables side. Your trade receivables have climbed up to INR 71 crore as of H1 FY26 from 57 crore in FY25. So given that 94% of the revenue is now B2C, which usually involves shorter payment cycles. So what is the reason for this increase and what steps are being taken to improve the cycle?
Right.
And
so
like
there are
connecting with this. Could you please give the overview of your, how your stores are performing in Bangalore?
Sure. So that would be three questions. I'll take question two first on the receivables. With respect to receivables, there are a couple of factors that are important to understand. One is that our general payment cycle online, is about 45 days, 30 to 45 days with the marketplace partners. We are also selling a lot of inventory on B2B2C model. Okay, essentially thereby removing all various variables in terms of logistic costs and those kind of things. So in those cases also there is a credit cycle associated with it. Having said that, in the case of pure B2C, we show all customer returns as a receivable till such time that the inventory is received back by us. So at any point of time, some portion of our receivables would actually be customer returns and stock that is pending to be received again. So that's the second aspect to understand, which stands in receivables. So that's technically stock standing within the scope of receivables. And that's mostly from an accounting point of view, how we represent things. And the last point is that most of our sales for the past quarters, including this current quarter, have been concentrated in the third month of the quarter, largely because the festive or the sale periods are falling up there. Just to give you an example, last year it was March was Eid and Ugadi Guri Padwa sale. June was end of season sale. September was Dasera sale. And again, December was end of season winter. So because the of revenue concentration in month three of a given period, about 50-60% revenue coming in month three, thereby the receivables kind of showcase a point in time of being higher than normal, which reverses over the general course of business. So a combination of these three factors have to be understood to look at receivables with greater clarity. But just to be clear, yes, receivables are something that would normalize over a period of time as we scale. It is that we are working on multiple models, but as scale, this would also kind of come to a more stable level. But so far as the sale concentration in monthly, that is kind of the major factor that results in certain amount of escalation, because most of the receivables emanate from that particular month.
Fair enough.
And so the question three on stores. So the stores have been performing well, but again, as I said, it's just six stores at the moment, which is a very low base. They are not a major contributor to the overall revenue or to the capital deployed of the company at this point of time. And currently, we continue to be focused on getting greater depth within e-commerce online or greater width within e-commerce online. And that focus continues to remain. At this point, it is again too early. It's only been a quarter, since the last time we kind of looked at performance. It's still a bit too early to kind of look at it. But we are going to kind of do a full review in March, and maybe as a part of the next set of investor presentation release, we can talk a little bit about how the stores are performing more specifically.
Yeah. Okay. I know. And last one, bookkeeping question, like if you can just highlight how you are seeing the quarter four regarding any industry headwinds or tailwinds, if you just specify anything on that.
Sure. So quarter four again remains a generally upbeat quarter from a demand point of view. We do see good demand overall. Again, month three where we have our Eid and Gudi Padwa sales happening, that is going to be the critical month. That would be the defining month for us. But largely it remains from a demand point of view, things seem very positive. Some of our bets that we did this year into the winter wear have paid off well. Some of it would show effect, has shown effect in Q3, and some of it will show effect in Q4 as well. Other than this, there are few lateral projects in terms of increasing width that we are working on, and at the same time we are also looking at how we can take how we can work with the right partners, who can distribute inventory globally as well. There's an entire global e-commerce angle that has come into play right now, but these are small seeds that we are putting in right now, which may give a bigger resolve over the next few quarters. At this point of time, the focus continues to remain to be in depth within the categories and within the brands that we are working in at the moment, with positive demand momentum.
Okay. That's it for myself, and good luck for the coming quarter.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Ankush Agarwal from Surge Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my question. So, firstly, we have seen a sharp jump in our other expense during the quarter. So, is there something to read over there? It's a normal course of business.
Thank you for that question. Other expenses have largely escalated because increased marketing initiatives on our side from a Diwali Dasera point of view. So you need to kind of get greater brand visibility during this time because the spends across the board from a competitive landscape is generally higher on marketing. So this is something that we had to do, the visibility trends to get the right amount of visibility onto our products. And that is what has happened in this particular period. Again, for us, the visibility spends are largely ROI-oriented, so we kind of make sure that we are still earning the right kind of ROI on the spends that we do, out there. So this is to answer on the other expenses, largely going to increased marketing expenses during festive period to ensure that brand gets the right amount of visibility and does not lose out on visibility to other competitors. But it's absolutely in the order of business.
Okay. Secondly, in your notes to account, you mentioned that we have taken a write-off of inventory of about 22 crores and that same has been written off in the P&L. But your expense doesn't tally that we have written off that 22 crores in the P&L. So just wanted to understand where we have written off that amount.
Sure. I'll just clarify on the accounting of it. So we have a valid insurance claim. Our insurance policy completely covers this value in question. So what we have done is we've written off the carrying value of the inventory, and based on the relevant communications that we've had with our surveyors and with the insurance company, based on that, there is a certain amount that is expected to be recovered, and that has been recognized as a receivable, which is equal to the carrying value of this inventory. So what has effectively happened is that there is a write-off in the P&L, which is based on the value of the stock, and there is also a exceptional gain that has been recorded on account of expected insurance claim receipts, and there's an insurance claim receivable also that has been recorded accordingly. So these are net off each other. The portion that is not covered by insurance, which is amounting to about 31.22 lakh, which has been communicated to us, that part we have written off because that is something that is known to us, that is not covered by insurance, and that part we have written off. But yeah, net-net, the loss that has occurred on account of fire has been covered against the insurance claim receivable based on the policy coverage.
Right. So net 31 lakhs is what we have written off during the quarter in the P&L. But there is a receivable against it, right? So net impact on the P&L during the quarter is only that 31 lakhs, right?
Yeah, it's just the 33 lakhs. 31 lakhs, sorry. 31.22 lakhs.
Yeah. Lastly, Vedant, just on the receivables, so like being a D2C sort of, you know, business, one would expect that the receivables would be relatively modest. I mean, I do understand that given the scale and, you know, the kind of receivables day of 30, 45 days that you're saying, but still for a business from, say, for example, now almost 35-40% of our business is coming from own brands, and even if we understand that in the business that you're doing for the licensed brand, the receivables might be on the higher end, but still, I mean, receivables which is close to like 100 days sort of doesn't add up for a business like yours. So, I mean, even if you say 35-45 day sort of receivable cycle, still that number on the books, it's still relatively higher. So just wanted to understand, one thing that I wanted to ask is, since a lot of our sales are routed through our parent company, Bank, so is it a situation wherein some of the receivables are also stuck on that company, or that company pays us off immediately as soon as they receive the money from the marketplaces?
Okay, so there are two parts to this. One is most of our sales is driven through marketplace models. Within marketplace models, also there are a number of sub-models that we operate on. They are in the nature of a B2B2C transaction also in some cases. So in those cases, basically, there is a credit period associated. Again, it depends on the model itself, but for that we get better commercial terms in terms of pricing, in terms of variability in the variable expenses. So those things are managed better in those models. So that's why we prefer it, even though the credit period is slightly on the higher side in those cases. Having said that, the real reason why receivables kind of look to be on the higher side one is a timing effect of concentration of revenue in a particular month. And the second is that the returns, the customer returns, the way in which we account for it, though it is actually stock, it is shown as returns till such time that it is received back. We can consider looking at a way of accounting or representation where that inventory actually looks in stock and, you know, this thing, but then we'll have to prepare certain comparatives to make sure that you, the investors understand this better. Yeah, but having said that, all our transactions with respect to, so one is the transactions which were happening through Bang Overseas, which was a related party, that is getting curtailed over a period of time as a percentage of the overall revenue. Most of the contracts are getting transferred directly within Thomas Scott India Limited, and these effects will start, have already started to show from Q3 onwards, will continue into Q4. So in that case also there's direct kind of, there's no pass-through or anything, but otherwise also the pass-through is just 1:1. In most cases. So it's just the sale of a month or so that kind of remains and that kind of, churns through in the coming month.
Right. Okay. So like in the very long run, as you grow as a business scales and everything, do you believe there is room for substantial reduction in receivable day, or it would be more of a sort of gradual reduction? It would still sort of settle at a relatively higher levels.
So we believe that long-term receivable days would settle at somewhere around 50 days. And this is under current accounting practice.
I missed that number.
Sorry?
How many days you say?
60 days.
60 days?
60 days. Yeah, long-term. Long-term. I'm saying long-term. Okay. We believe that receivable days would settle somewhere close to 60 days. But there is a, we need all the contracts to be transitioned in that manner, our models to kind of move into pure B2C. So those kind of things are under play right now. As soon as that kind of comes into effect over a period of time, automatically you will start seeing receivable days of closer to 60 days. I can't commit a timeline at the moment as to where we will get there because, you know, at the end of the day, there are certain business considerations where we offer additional credit period as well. But that should kind of normalize over a period of time as we scale.
Got it. That was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Divya Jain from Sapphire Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Am I audible?
Yes,
ma'am. So, how much did the winter wear collection contribute to our revenue this quarter?
Sure. So, we believe that about based on our end. So when we say winter, there are two parts to it actually. One is our autumn winter 26 kind or 25 kind of collection, which is say heavier shorts and those kind of things. And then there is core winter wear articles, which is like jacket, sweater, sweatshirt, and those kind of products. All right. Now, when I say winter wear, I just mean core winter wear products. I do not mean, you know, other articles in which there would be certain winter-based launches. When we look at purely winter wear products, which is largely sweaters, sweatshirt, jackets, these products have contributed somewhere close to about 15 to 20% during this particular quarter. And in the month of December, it was as high as 35%.
All right. And can you quantify the inventory loss at our warehouse in Bhiwandi?
Yeah, so the carrying value of the inventory at our warehouse in Bhiwandi has been disclosed in notes to account at 21 crore, 85 lakh rupees, approximately.
All right, sir. And one last question. Our expectations for revenue next year and also for EBITDA margin?
So currently we are not giving any forward-looking statements in terms of this thing. The revenue or margin projections, but we will continue to remain on a growth trajectory that we have been. So you would see a very, very similar set of growth numbers is what we're expecting over a period of time. So the growth journey will continue, and we are targeting EBITDA margins between 12 to 15% at any point of time. So we will maintain that. Obviously, as we scale, there is potential for these margins to improve.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Harsh Shah from Samara International LLP. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Congratulations on a good quarter. So my question is related to our fire incident. And so, we have recorded a write-down in our P&L and we have recorded a receivable from the insurance company. So what is the timeline? When do we expect to receive the payment from the insurance company?
Sure. Thank you for the question. So, since the matter is subject to, insurance and survey, I can't really comment much on it. But generally, our claim is mostly claim of stock. And stock claims are generally backed by, strong GST documents. So based on this and based on our understanding of how claims work, stock claims are generally faster to settle. The only thing is that the sheer documentation that is required to be submitted, considering the high volume of transactions that were happening from this particular warehouse, is on the higher side. So, and there are certain prescribed formats in which these submissions have to happen. So there are few iterations that we have to go through. But generally, once the entire documentation is completed, we don't expect that it should take too much time for the claims to be settled. And our team is on it, to make sure that this happens at the fastest pace possible. Having said that, there is no fixed timeline that I can, mention at this moment. But generally, stock claims, as I said, are very fast to are faster in general to settle.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ankur Gulati from Genuity Capital. Please go ahead.
Can you quantify revenue loss because of fire?
Ankur, sorry to interrupt. We lost your audio in between. Can you repeat your question from the beginning a little louder, please?
Hi, audible now?
Yes.
Can you quantify revenue loss because of fire? I understand 21 out there inventory. So if we have to quantify revenue loss, should we just add gross profit to this? That's the potential revenue loss in this quarter.
Thank you for the question. I'm thankful for you to ask this question. Now, while it is a little difficult to say because there was a lot of effort that our teams and the team at Thomas Scott has put in post the incident to make sure that we cover up revenue. So it is a little difficult to say because of the event there are certain other actions that we took. Factories started working a little extra, teams started working more efficiently, we figured out how we can work with channel partners more deeply. So a lot of effort that was taken by the team post the incident, and a great momentum has been achieved by the team, owing to that desire to kind of make sure that we do not miss targets. So that so there was a behavioral change overall in terms of how we kind of manage things. We worked very hard to kind of ensure that our growth journey does not get impacted despite this setback. Our supply chain was quick to react. So there's a lot of things right from the grassroots factory worker to, the teams, operational logistics teams that have worked around the clock, to make sure that the journey that the company is on in terms of growth is collectively kind of achieved. Having said that, and I'm totally speaking from my judgment, and it is very difficult to quantify because maybe we would have been in a very different state had that not happened. But purely based on my judgment, we feel that there would be about a 15 to 20% further revenue that we could have potentially achieved based on judgment, despite a certain amount of hard work that was put in by the teams post the particular event. Some of the expenses that we have incurred in this quarter, they would still remain at the current level. So the margins could have been also higher. But we have still made sure that as much as possible, the overall impact is minimized. And even for future quarters, we kind of upped the entire level of efficiency or the level at which we are operating at, so that this momentum that we are in terms of growth, it continues, going ahead as well. But so headline is that it's a little difficult to quantify because there are certain steps that we took post that, certain amount of hard work that the team has put in post that, which I'm very thankful for. But in general, purely based on my judgment, we believe that 15 to 20% additional revenue could have been expected in this particular quarter.
So you did 67, 15% of that is 10 crores. So steady state, it should have been close to, let's say, 75, 76 this quarter. Fair enough.
That is for the 15%. So we were looking at a number closer to 75 to 80 in case the fire incident was had not happened. But again, it's difficult to say.
And in this fire, did you lose anything which you committed to some of your e-commerce clients or some of the brands? So is there a penalty clause that has triggered in yet or no?
No, there is no penalty clause or there is no, so our growth percentages have still been very high and there are no penalty clauses stipulated in general. In some contracts of ours, there are minimum guarantees that are there, mm-hmm. but even those would not be invoked because our revenue levels are still much higher than the minimum guarantee levels. So in any case, there's nothing from that side. In fact, channel partners have been very supportive through this journey. And there has been certain new avenues that we have been working with channel partners in terms of increasing speed to delivery by housing inventory, with channel partners. So those kind of models have opened up and that has resulted in making sure that the revenue level remains.
Last part, whatever the inventory loss, any color that whether you lost that mostly for your own showroom or was it for licensed brands or for e-commerce?
So it was a mix. It was a very similar mix to the revenue mix overall. So generally we house inventory in a manner that is optimized for speed. So it's not that it is concentrated with one particular brand all to you know. It's concentrated very evenly across all our warehouses.
Look, thanks for all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question is from the line of Swapnil Kabra from SK Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Swapnil. Thank you for the question.
Hi, Vedant. Congratulations on another quarter of good performance. So I just had a couple of questions. What exactly is driving demand for us, and what are the triggers that will help us in growing the top line? And also, are we in talks with any new brands?
Sure. So generally the demand has been upbeat, and our test and scale model is something that is servicing us better than before, where we have a lot of top ranking products that we have created over this period of time, and there is good amount of demand and ranking on those products, and they are driving kind of continuous profitable sales for us. So going deeper in general with our existing brands and making sure that we are able to maintain ranking through our superior quality and execution, that is kind of making sure that the demand is maintained, or the demand momentum is maintained. At this point of time, I can't really comment on any brand that we are onboarding or are working or, you know, are looking at, because that is generally competitive information for us. The focus at this point of time is in terms of going deeper in terms of the existing brands that we are working with, and also kind of focusing how we can leverage our e-commerce know-how, to create additional channels for demand, even with the current brand pool. Probably you will hear more on this in the March quarter, once there are certain contract signings or launches that happen, which are in the pipeline. But till such launches or contract signings are completed, I'm unable to comment on them.
Yeah, so is this a function of better customer discovery or anything else that you want to add here? Or better marketing, I mean.
Yeah, so it's really a function of making sure that our products that are top ranked continue to remain top ranked. And we keep adding more and more top ranked products. We are doing small launches, small batch launches, seeing how things perform. So our inventory investment is very low, but the products that hit, they are big hits, and we have to just make sure that we are maintaining them with the right quality in stock all the time. And as soon as that happens, marketplaces in general start pushing product by themselves. Your product kind of starts climbing the ranks and getting more visibility by itself. This momentum has kind of come in, and that is contributing to greater demand for us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Anil Parekh, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, sir, you're audible.
Okay, thank you for taking my question. Hi, Vedant. I was just trying to understand the business of Thomas Scott in a little more detail. I was going through your website, and I see products which are listed at a price point of greater than 4,000 for even shirts and jeans. I was just wondering, because when you compare this pricing to popular brands like Levi's, when it comes to denims and jeans, they are priced at a lower price point. So I guess my question is, which age group is your primary target audience? Any details you could share on, what percentage of your sales go to under 20 age group, between 20 and 30 and so on, would really help. And, in addition, your expensive products, how quickly do they move compared to products under 1500? Could you share with me some details? Could you give us a little bit of color on that?
Sure. So there are two parts to your question. One is on pricing for Thomas Scott brand, and the other is on the demographics. I'll take the first question. In terms of pricing for Thomas Scott brand, so Thomas Scott has been launched as an online-first, online-focused brand. When we had launched, essentially at that point of time, even right now, there are certain browsing pages that are available on marketplaces that are available to only a certain discount percentage, all right? So there is a high MRP, high discount kind of strategy that was implemented for some of the product lines back then. and it has continued even today to make sure that we are relevant in those browsing pages. It is more of a strategy that we use to make sure that we can get as much additional visibility for our products as possible by being able to enter those pages. You may have seen some of those products generally, but our selling price is not that high. It is mostly at par, with what a premium brand, would be. So our denims typically have an average selling price of close to actually 1,200 rupees. Our trousers are close to, again, 1,200 rupees. Shorts are between 800 to 1,000 rupees. That's where the average selling price tends to trend. So generally, it's a good, it's a good selling price from an online point of view. It is slightly more than what you will find for, a lot of other brands online. But I want to emphasize that the quality that we offer and the kind of product that we offer, the same factories that make goods for world-class brands are also making for Thomas Scott. And there is certain, additional cost associated with it. But it's this very quality that kind of creates a repeat customer behavior for us. So that's the reason why, our pricing is maybe on slightly the higher side, but I don't think it is remarkably higher than the competition. Having said that, overall, it's just a high MRP, high TD, high discounting kind of thing that and those products that you may have seen that you may have formed that view, but generally pricing is at par. And in terms of demographics, so our major demographic actually is the 25 to 40 years segment. And there is also the secondary demographic that we target, which is between 20 to 25. Essentially, a lot of our, purchases, a lot of purchases that happen are for young individuals who are young men who are moving into their first job or into corporate jobs or have just, in the first 2-3 years of their corporate jobs. A lot of our marketing initiatives also towards it kind of see us as the preferred brand for, a casual go-to office or go-out or daily wear, positioning. And then these customers tend to remain, repeat customers for a long-term period of time, ensuring brand loyalty. So that's how we kind of target our customers. But yeah, most the major demographic in terms of actual sales is about 25 years to 40 years.
That's great. I have a quick follow up. How do you see this, the consumption landscape in India change for an apparel company like yours? Say if we talk about 2 years out or 5 years out. Any information on that would be tremendously helpful. Because you're an online marketplace for apparel, how do you see this consumption pattern change? What does it look like? It's going to be 3-4 years out.
Sure. So when we look at, online, I will just talk about online apparel first, and then I'll kind of zoom into where we are. If you look at online apparel, it was growing at a very steady rate, right up to COVID, maybe somewhere around 30-35% kind of growth rates. That some of the marketplaces were experiencing right up to COVID. In COVID, there was a J-shaped kind of increase in online purchasing. This was largely driven by, the lockdowns. And this resulted in the first-time customers, first-time customers kind of trying online, doing the test and buy, those kind of things. And now these customers, who the first-time customers that were created during COVID, they are now the repeat customers who are doing the 30th, 40th, 50th purchase online. What we have found in terms of our understanding of the purchase patterns, we have found that as these customers are going from their first purchase to their 30th or 40th purchase, their basket size and their the kind of brands that they are purchasing are both increasing. By brands increasing, I mean they're premiumizing in general. This was something that we recognized in early 2024, and that's when we decided that, premiumization as a trend is going to continue because of a number of factors. One is with repeat purchases, increasing confidence in online. That is the first factor. And the second factor is an increase in the aspirational class overall who are aspiring to buy products of a superior quality or a superior make.
And the third factor is also disposable incomes increasing in general, for the younger consumers. So a combination of these three factors made us believe that the right space for us to be would be from the mass premium to premium kind of segment online, and that's where we geared our entire focus. We believe that this market will show outsized growth against your baseline growth that online is experiencing, online apparel is experiencing. Generally, online apparel in major marketplaces is experiencing a 25 to 35% kind of growth even right now. We believe that there will be outsized growth that would be there in the more premium or mass premium segments, and our focus will continue to remain out there.
So the mass premium and the premium segments that you're defining, are you defining it somewhere in the price bracket of 1,000 to 1,500?
Yes. So from 750 right up to 2,000, is the bracket that we're looking at.
Okay. And my last question is, what percentage of products sold come back as return?
Sure. So this differs usually from brand to brand and category to category. And there are two types of returns. I'll just put a little bit of light on this. In our case, our customer returns are quite low. So we have customer returns of somewhere approximately close to 20%, which is lower than 28 to 30% that most other apparel brands experience in terms of customer returns. Our return to origin, which is basically in the case of cash on delivery COD orders, where the customer does not accept the order. So generally at the industry level, it's anywhere between 10 to 20%, depending on how many, how localized your inventory and how fast you deliver to the customer is. In our case, it is as low as 6 to 9%. Generally, our return percentages are lower than the benchmark. Two reasons driving this: from a customer returns point of view, it's our superior quality and the value that we are giving to customers. At that price point. In terms of RTO, it's because of our speed, our localization of inventory, that we are able to kind of have lower return to origin RTO cases. So yeah, that's on the customer returns.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ankush Agarwal from Surge Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi everyone. Thanks for the opportunity again. So with that, a core part of our business growth is driven by us identifying trends and then, launching SKUs and benefiting from them. But can you give some sense of how much of our business would still be reliant on, say, SKUs or designs those were launched, say, 1 year or 2 years back? Because unless we have a base business and as the business size grows, I think driving growth from new trends every now and then would slightly become difficult at a larger scale. So just wanted to understand how the base business is shaping up.
Sure. The positive is that we are focused in menswear as a segment where the trends are very long cycle. So even today, amongst the bestseller products that we created, say, 2 or 3 years back out, maybe just 2 or 3% of those products have actually gone into a de-trend bucket. Otherwise, these trends are long-term. In fact, in the case of menswear, we find that, launching more colors, if a base color, say a black color shirt is doing well, and if we launch a few more colors in that, we end up finding that customers are also purchasing those other colors once they have confidence in the first color that they purchased. So the trends are very long cycle, and you can capitalize deeper on trends in menswear. Once we identify what's working and launch lateral products as well, be it color variations. And as I said, for styles that we launched 2 or 3 years back, the D10 rate has not been more than 2 to 3%. So we are stacking up a lot of best sellers, or rather a lot of high ranked products over a period of time. That is driving a lot of our growth as well. Having said that, it is still important to keep accumulating those bestsellers, and that is why the fashion engine also needs to keep churning. So it's a double engine. Growth is a double engine of fashion bets as well as, replenishment or high rank style. And we need to kind of maintain the balance between the two.
We are maintaining a very constant rate at which we are launching new SKUs. It is accelerating at a constant rate, just to be very clear. It is not like if we launch 5,000 this quarter, it's the same 5,000 to 5,200, 5,300 SKUs in the coming quarter. But again, our bet sizes are so small that it becomes insignificant, lesser and lesser significant as a percentage of the overall launches that we do.
Right. Got it. That was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. As there are no further questions, I will now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. So, would like to give any closing comments?
I would like to thank all participants in this earnings conference call. Of course, if you have any further questions or would like to know more about the company, please do reach out to our investor relations manager at Valorem Advisors. I would also like to thank Valorem Advisors for arranging this conference and the entire team. So thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Thomas Scott India Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and we may now disconnect. Thank you.